abdomen. I don't want to turn him into an addict. You can't turn somebody into an addict just by giving them opioids to manage their pain. There has to be a genetic, environmental predisposition, physiological predisposition to addiction. You can't just turn somebody into addiction. It's not like flipping a switch. It's not like you could say to a patient, if I give you insulin, I turn you into a diabetic. It doesn't work that way. If I give the medication now, it won't work when he really needs it. Our migraine patient back here brought this up before. I don't know, maybe it's me, but if he has the pain now, he really needs it now. I'm afraid she'll fall if I give that kind of medication. Do opioids increase the risk of falls? Raise your hand if you think they do. Actually, there were a number of studies done at City of Hope Hospital in Duarte, California, Dr. Bruce Farrell. And what the findings are is that opioids don't increase the risk of falls. What increases the risk of falls? Unrelieved pain. He's a drug seeker. She just likes her pain medication. We need to look at, are they drug seeking or are they pain relief seeking? And we need to step back from our biases, our judgments, and our misconceptions. Policies and procedures that support safe medication, prescription, ordering, and storage. What medications we're utilizing and how we're utilizing them. If we talk about medical management of pain, no toxic drugs. We talked about non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs being the number one cause of adverse drug reaction in the elderly. We need to use these with extreme caution. No ineffective drugs. Darvon and Darvocet. How many of you are still using Darvon and Darvocet? It's still out there, I know. It's all right, you don't even have to raise your hands. I know you're still using it in a lot of your facilities. Darvon and Darvocet are about as effective as extra strength Tylenol. That's it. But Darvon and Darvocet cause central nervous system and cardiac toxicity. Demerol. Demerol is broken down to an active metabolite that causes central nervous system toxicity and lowers the seizure threshold. When we talk about medical management, no toxic drugs, no ineffective drugs. No short-acting drugs for long-lasting pain. Tell me if this sounds familiar. Resident has pain all day, every day, and around the clock, and we give Percocet every 6 hours. Anybody doing that? Yeah. We've got two issues here. First of all, if they've got pain all day, every day, and around the clock, we should be using long-acting analgesics. The second problem is Percocet doesn't work for 6 hours. Percocet works for 3 to 4 hours. So if your doc orders the drug for every 6 hours, I guarantee the resident's going to be calling for pain medication in 3 to 4 hours. Or if they're not calling for pain medication, they may still be in pain. We don't inflict pain to treat pain. What do I mean by that? The IM route of administration is not recommended for any type of pain management. There's no good reason for poking holes in your residents. The IM route of administration hurts, and this is supposed to be pain management. It still takes 30 to 60 minutes to peak effect. Absorption is unreliable. With chronic administration, we can get sterile abscess and muscle fibrosis. No good reason for using IM. If somebody can't take PO, we have other routes of administration. So our key concepts in pain control is we use a preventative approach to pain management. That means we give analgesics before the pain occurs or increases, and around the clock if pain is present for most of the day. If somebody has pain all day, every day, and around the clock, why are we waiting for that pain to come back to administer the analgesic? If somebody's had back pain, arthritis pain, neck pain for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, does anybody here believe that tomorrow when this resident wakes up, the pain will be gone? So why are we ordering these medications PRN? And we are. We choose appropriate drugs. We titrate to effect, not to milligrams or micrograms. There is no one size fits all. We start low, we go slow, and we titrate to effect. We use the least invasive approach possible. We assess, document, reassess, and document some more, because that's what we do. We need to talk about PRN medications. And I always save this for a little later in the program because I have to kind of get worked up for this one. You all know the true meaning of PRN? It doesn't mean as needed. You only think it means as needed. Oh, thank you so much. Somebody understands. PRN means patient receives none. If you think I'm wrong, go back to your facilities, look at your MARs and your PRN analgesics, and tell me if I'm not right. And I have somebody in the audience who's done chart audits in my facility, and even in my facility you'll find that. And I'm a pain in the... So PRN medications should only be used for episodic, inconsistent, unpredictable, and breakthrough pain. That's it. Not for pain that's present all day, every day, and around the clock. If somebody's got pain all day, every day, and around the clock, their meds should not be PRN. They should be standing orders. And we should be using long-acting. Continuity of care. Unit to unit, facility to facility, and facility to home. That means pain management has to be part of the discharge plan of care. If somebody goes to the hospital and they use a certain word for pain, like Luigi and Doloro, let them know why should Luigi suffer in the hospital because they haven't figured out that Doloro means pain in Italian. If Rose goes to another facility, it's okay to tell the secret that if she has her arms folded over her head, it means she has a headache. We need to communicate. That's part of continuity of care. Performance improvement. Raise your hand if you're involved in performance improvement. I'll give you a hint. It's a trick question. Let's try it again. Raise your hand if you're involved in performance improvement. There you go. You're all involved in performance improvement. It's part of everything we do every day. It's why we do what we do and the way we do it. It's why y'all are here today. It's why pain management is a systems issue and not a nursing issue or a medicine issue or a rehabilitation therapy issue. It's a systems issue. Some things that we need to monitor in performance improvement and pain management. Documentation, a pain assessment tool has been completed on all newly admitted residents as well as those with a change of status and on readmission. Documentation that pain has been treated and the resident is able to maintain an acceptable pain level. Documentation showing the care plan has been updated regularly. Are you all seeing a pattern here? Documentation! Documentation, documentation, documentation. Going back to the MDS, looking at Section J, item J2A, if it equals a 2, moderate or severe pain, J5A, we need to look at this. Section Q, if it triggers a 2 on consecutive MDSs, we need to look at this as a call for performance improvement. Documentation of education for staff, residents, and their families. Follow-up of residents. I like to use my 24-hour report sheet and my daily report because it really does give me an interdisciplinary picture of the resident's level of comfort or discomfort. One of the other things you should use the 24-hour report sheet to do, though, is identify residents in need of pain assessment. Somebody with a new bruise, somebody who fell, somebody with a skin tear. They may need a pain assessment. We need to establish accountability for pain management. Provide pain management classes as part of new employee orientation. It's as important as residents' rights. And after all, isn't it one of their rights? Provide education regarding policies and procedures for assessing residents' pain during orientation. Educate residents and families about the importance of reporting pain and the harmful effects of unrelieved and inadequately controlled pain. Provide frequent updates on pain management. Some of you may want to incorporate into your mission statement language about pain management. Now, for most of us, the mission statements were written in stone long before we entered the facility. Some of us long before we were born. And so those are sort of sacred cows, and we don't touch mission statements. But we can include it in our literature that we provide, in our admission agreements. Most of us have websites now, and we can talk about pain and reporting pain on those websites as well. If you go to my facility's website, there's a lot of information about pain. What's my website? www.brandywinecares.com. Establishing accountability for pain management. Competency testing. Joint Commission loves competencies, don't they? I do pain competencies for my nurses and my CNAs annually with their reviews. Standardized flow sheets and assessment forms for pain management in your facility. Revise your 24-hour report sheet to have triggers so people look at and ask for information about adequacy of pain control. Revise the physician physical assessment form. This was a biggie. I had one physician in my facility who routinely would document on the presence of pain. One out of four wasn't doing it for us. So how could we change their practice to ensure that we had documentation about pain and pain management interventions? We put a line right into the form, right into their monthly progress notes. If there's a form, if there's a blank, if there's a space, they fill it out. If you want them to think of it on their own, you got a shot at it, but we provide monthly reports to the pharmacy consultant regarding our residents with regards to pain management. And I meet routinely with the pharmacy consultant, making sure we have access to the medications we need and utilize. Communication. We know that this is critical. Communicate to all staff the procedure to follow when someone's in pain. Have you ever had a situation where a nursing assistant has said to you, I reported it to the nurse and she didn't listen? Yeah, that happens now and then, doesn't it? The nurses have to listen. But CNAs stop reporting if the nurses don't listen. And who can blame them? So what is your policy if they're not heard? Who do they go to? They need to know this. My facility, my nursing assistants know. You go to that nurse. If that nurse isn't hearing you, you go to the supervisor. If that supervisor isn't hearing you, you come to me. You leave me a message on my voicemail. You know I'll be on it. Communicate to all staff the procedure to follow when treatment isn't working. Make sure they're being heard. And we need to communicate and collaborate. It's not just a nursing domain. It's not just a medicine domain. Your pharmacy consultant can be a key resource person. Use your pharmacy consultant. Talk to your rehab therapy team. What else can we do for this resident? What can recreation add to the plan of care for pain management? When we talk about risk management and legal consequences, nurses have a duty not to introduce their own interpretation of residents' reports about quality of pain and intensity of pain. Rather, it is our job to accept the resident's report of pain. Now, that sounds rather obvious, but have any of you ever seen nursing documentation that reads, patient reports pain rating of 10, but she doesn't look like she's in that much pain? I do a lot of chart audits, and I still see it. That would not be meeting our duty of care. We have a duty to reflect upon personal values and beliefs and be aware of what those are, but not let them influence the plan of care for the resident. When we talk about additional risk management and legal consequences, we have a duty to base our practice on currently accepted knowledge that is derived from research, standards of care. The American Geriatric Society published The Management of Persistent Pain in Older Persons. This is a new guideline and standard of care. It is in the bibliography. You'll be able to find it there. And you can get it from their website as well. This is a standard of care, the AGS guidelines, the APS guidelines, the World Health Organization, the Joint Commission, the World Health Organization. We have best practices and standards of care. If we don't practice in accordance with the standards, it is substandard care, and we are at risk for fraud, negligence, and malpractice. There's a book I cited in your bibliography, Medical Legal Aspects of Long-Term Care. There is a chapter on pain management. What's interesting about this book is it's published by the Lawyers and Judges Publishing Company. Yeah, and it's written for lawyers and judges and risk managers. And why would they be interested in pain management? Because they think they found a deep pocket, and the way we've practiced historically, they may have. Evidence-based practice. We need to regard the relief of pain as a reasonable goal and a goal that requires therapeutic intervention. We have a duty to care. Our residents have a legitimate right to relief of pain. Long-term care has a legal responsibility, and this is going to sound very familiar to those of you who have been in long-term care for 10 years or more. Our legal responsibility is to improve function, optimize independence, maximize quality of life, prevent avoidable decline. What does this come from? Come on, you all know this. OBRA, the OBRA guidelines. This is our legal responsibility, and it includes our responsibility to assess and manage our residents' pain. Legal implications. We've already seen lawsuits against clinicians and facilities for failure to manage pain. Failure to manage pain was charged as elder abuse out in California. Elder abuse. Are there louder buzzwords in long-term care than abuse, neglect, mistreatment? And we've already seen a lawsuit. Failure to manage pain. Failure to manage pain in accordance with the standard of care was seen as substandard care. Multi-million dollar verdict. And we're seeing more and more of these lawsuits. In April of 2003, Compassion in Dying Foundation filed a complaint with the CMS and Department of Health regarding inadequate pain control. This filing resulted in a Class A notice of deficiency against the nursing home that failed to provide that care. We'll be seeing more of this as well. Pain is a more terrible lord of mankind than even death itself. Think about your residents who day after day, week after week, month after month, and year after year live with pain. And think about what you can do to make that better. You can be the leadership. And so I have a challenge for all of you. You ready for the challenge? Challenge the process. Don't just do what you've always done because that's how you've always done it. Inspire a shared vision. Enable others to act. Model the way, lead by example, and encourage the heart. You truly can have a huge impact on quality of life for all of your residents, regardless of diagnosis or prognosis. And with that challenge, there is one more challenge. And that challenge is to be a pain manager. And we're going to play the pain game. And for those of you who think you're running out the room, I have bribery. I believe in bribery. We're going to play the pain game, and we're playing for chocolate. Now, let me explain the rules of the game. Okay? This is called the pain game. Who wants to be a pain manager? I'm going to put a question up on the board, and there are multiple choice answers. If you raise your hand and you give me the right answer, the nice iPro folks will give you chocolate. However, if you don't raise your hand, you don't get chocolate because I can't keep track of you. There's too many of you. So you have to raise your hand. I have to call on you. You have to get it right, and then you get chocolate. Does that make sense? Okay? So you got to raise your hand. Are you guys ready back there? Okay. pain is all of the following except A, subjective, B, individualized, C, an unpleasant sensory or emotional experience, or D, a normal consequence of aging. Right in the front. D, a normal consequence of aging. Correct, right in the front. Wave your hand. There you go. There's a lot of you, so wave your hand after I've called on you so they can find you. See, this is easy. You can do this. We know that pain is not a normal consequence of aging. The rest we know are true. All right, here we go. A resident who is cognitively impaired, A, doesn't know if he has pain, B, may have difficulty communicating his needs, C, probably doesn't need analgesics, or D, should not receive opioids. Right here. Nope, right here. The answer is B, may have difficulty communicating his needs. Wave your hand. What we have found more and more is the cognitively impaired resident can report pain. If they tell you it hurts, it hurts. They may not be able to tell you, it's my lower back on the right side by my fourth rib, but they can tell you they have pain. Which of these pain rating tools can be used by a cognitively impaired resident? A, numeric, B, faces, C, visual analog, or D, all of the above can be tried. No, you have to raise your hand. Okay, all the way in the back, waving and jumping. What's the answer, all the way in the back, waving and jumping? D, all of the above can be tried. On a good day, you may get somewhere. On a bad day, you may not. But you can try. And if somebody can utilize a numeric scale, that's their scale. Stick with it. Don't change. If Unit A is using numeric, Unit B, Unit C, and your Alzheimer's unit should all be using the same scale. A resident with chronic back pain who repeatedly asks for pain medication is A, a clock watcher, B, a drug seeker, C, a complainer, or D, receiving inadequate pain control, right here in the front. The answer is D. The answer is D. Wave your hand. Okay, there you go. Okay, you ready? Don't worry, we have plenty. I have plenty of chocolate, and we have questions. The state survey process includes A, is the pain identified and assessed? B, is the pain or cause treated? C, is the pain monitored and reevaluated? Or D, all of the above? Don't call out. In the blue-gray, yeah. The answer is D, all of the above. Wave your hand. There you go, Maureen. Okay. You ready? Non-pharmacologic interventions that can be utilized in the plan of care for a cognitively impaired resident include A, guided imagery, B, massage, C, exercise, D, all of the above, or E, none of the above. The first hand that I saw was right over there. Yeah.
D, all of the above.
D, all of the above. There you go. Possible indicators of pain include all of the following except A, hearing loss, B, sleep cycle, C, change in ADL function, D, weight loss, or E, change in behavior. Right here. The answer is A, hearing loss. While your patients may have selective hearing, it has nothing to do with pain. The rest, though, look for on that NDS. Look at the big picture. Opioid use in the elderly may be appropriate for the treatment of moderate to severe pain. B, increases the risk of falls. C, should not be started unless there's a DNR order. D, is illegal. Right here. The answer is A, may be appropriate for the treatment of moderate to severe pain. Excellent. Wave your hand. There you go. JACO's standards for pain assessment include all of the following except A, all residents must be assessed for the presence of pain. B, residents are assessed on admission and regularly thereafter. C, all pain must be alleviated. Or D, pain and pain relief must be documented. Right here in the front. The answer is C. That is correct. Jaco doesn't say we have to make all pain go away. It says we have to assess. It says we have to intervene. You got to read the accept. I put it in bold and everything. You ready? Which one of the following interventions would be appropriate at step one of the WHO analgesic ladder? Let's try this again. Step one in the WHO analgesic ladder, mild pain. Is it A, opioid analgesics, B, acetaminophen, C, nerve blocked, or D, vodka? She raised her hand. Only one person. Y'all are yelling out. What's the answer? Acetaminophen, B. Now, opioids, we know, are appropriate for moderate to severe pain. Nerve blocks, severe pain. Vodka, well, it may make the resident feel better, but it has no analgesic effect. All of the following, ready? All of the following are barriers to good pain management except A, lack of education, B, lack of accountability, C, biases and misconceptions, or D, all are potential barriers. I saw a hand right over here. What's the answer? The answer is, what is it?
D.
D, all are potential barriers. All of these are potential barriers, and so we need to be aware. Which of the following statements about assessing pain is true? A, the physician or nurse can best gauge the resident's level of discomfort. B, the resident's self-report is the most reliable indicator of the presence of pain. C, if the resident is sleeping, he or she doesn't have pain. Or D, if the resident can be distracted from his or her pain, the pain isn't real. Don't call out. In the middle. The answer is B. The resident's self-report is the most reliable indicator of the presence of pain. All right. This is a harder one. The most constipating of the opioids is A, morphine, B, fentanyl, C, hydrocodone, or D, codeine? The answer is D, codeine. Very good. All right. For an extra question, there is one drug more constipating than Tylenol number 3. Does anybody know what the one drug more constipating than Tylenol number 3 is? No, it's not methadone. It's not. In the back. That is Tylenol number 4! Yes! Just give them more codeine. They'll be more constipated. All right, you ready? All right, here we go. Okay. Now, don't forget, you got to raise your hand. The MDS definition of pain includes all of the following except A, pain is whatever the individual says that it is. B, pain is an inevitable part of the aging process. If you call out, I can't call on you. C, any type of physical discomfort. It is a subjective experience. D, evidence of pain may be based on observation. For those residents unable to verbalize. In the middle. The answer is B, because it's false. Correct. Wave your hand. Okay, ready? Which of the following departments are involved in performance improvement? A, nursing, B, pharmacy, C, medicine, D, rehab, or E, all of the above? In the middle. E, all of the above! Very good. All right, you ready? This is for nurses only. IM injection is the best method for delivering analgesics. A, never. B, when the individual is NPO. C, to the elderly, or D, to children. In the back. The answer is what? A. Is that what you said? what I thought you said. A, never. Don't poke holes in your residence. Respiratory depression from opioid use in chronic pain management. A is a frequent occurrence. B occurs in about 50% of residents. C occurs in about 75% of residents. Or D is rare, right in the front. D is rare, right here in the front. Maureen, they're really making you work, aren't they? Right here in the front. Right here. Okay, you ready? Physical dependence means A, the person is addicted. B, the person will experience withdrawal symptoms if a substance is abruptly stopped or suddenly tapered. C, death is imminent. Or D, the person is receiving too much of the substance and it should be discontinued. The answer is B, right here in the front. Wave your hand. What percent of residents receiving opioids for pain management develop signs or symptoms of addiction? A, don't call out. A, 50%. B, 75%. C, 10%.